Hello and welcome to Through the Turnstiles podcast as we take an in-depth look at the lower leagues of Scottish football. Thanks for joining us for this extra time special as we're joined by current Stenhousemuir hitman Greg Spence. How are you?
Yep, all good. Delighted to be on, boys.
Good, thank you very much for coming on. Joined as well by James Ann Muzz. How are you, Stu?
Not bad, eh?
Yeah, grand, thanks.
I know, this will be good. Looking forward to this one, actually. So Greg's come on board to tell us a few stories about his career. Few questions sent in from the fans as well. You seem to have a big impact with all our fans, Greg. It's mostly from them. You enjoyed all your times there?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's four spells I've had there, which is quite unusual, but I loved every minute being at that club and some good memories on the pitch, and I got on quite well with quite a lot of the supporters because I've got quite a small support, but very loyal. So nothing but good memories from there.
In preparation for this, Greg, I watched your winner against Rangers in the Cup, which is probably what defined your career the most at that moment. What a finish it was. Is that probably up there with one of your career highlights?
Absolutely. I don't usually score good goals. It's always tap-ins for a few yards, so I'm sure that was just outside the box. But yeah, that was my best moment in my career. Really special moment. It was just obviously one that pops up every now and again. You get to watch the highlights and brings back good memories.
Muzz is going to be the MC for tonight with most of the questions to save us kind of nipping in and cutting each other off. So Muzz will take most of the questions and me and James will kind of pop in as we can. But just to get one of the questions out of the way, actually, it came from Aloha Stats on Twitter. And you'd mentioned four spells at Aloha. He's asking, is Greg looking forward to his fifth spell with the Wasps in a few years' time? He's a couple of goals off 50 for Aloha and I'd love to see him get them.
Well, that's the thing. You can never say never, and I'm still only 28, so I'm hoping to still be going to about 35, 36. So with the part-time game, it's one-year deals that you get. So you never know with circumstances. It's a club that I would happily go and play for again.
Did you know you were close to 50 for them? Is that something you keep tabs on, your numbers and stuff?
I do sort of keep tabs on my numbers, and I'm sure Kevin Colley is around the 50 mark, and right. I always remember I was just behind him, but obviously he scored quite a few this season, so I sort of knew that was the region.
Good. Well, there's one of them. Muzz, I'll pass over to you for the rest. I've earned my keep now.
At all, we'll maybe touch on Aloha a wee bit more, Greg, later on, but in the meantime, how do you assess Stenhousemuir's season so far? Obviously, it's been a bizarre season. But how do you rate how it's gone so far on the pitch?
I think if you looked at the league table, we'd be a wee bit disappointed. I know it sounds a bit cliche, but we've been really unlucky with a few injuries this season. And I feel with a full-strength team, we'd be bang right up there. And there's been a couple of games this season where we've conceded three games we've conceded in the last minute to lose points. And if you added their points on it, our total, I know it's all ifs and buts, you'd be right on sort of second place. But unfortunately, it's went against us. So we're sitting mid-table, and if we do get the go-ahead to return, if we put a good run together, we should definitely make the playoffs in my eyes.
I was at your game against Edinburgh City, actually, and I think you played well. And the one at Hampden, I think you went one up. I think Biabi scored like 10, 15 minutes in maybe, and then I think he's got an injury. And McGuigan came on, and then I just felt you was kind of tired, and it was just the depth coming off the bench for Queen's Park. And I think I should have said it on the show at the time, actually. See, for me, that was the only difference. I thought for 80 minutes, you was bossed that game through there and created really good chances. But it was just, like you say, a couple of last-minute goals that stopped you getting the result.
Yeah, I think you're right to say that. If you look at our squad, we've brought in about six or seven younger boys that have probably not played senior football before. And it's a wonderful opportunity for them. And injuries to key senior boys, that is your experience. If you want to go and challenge at the top end of the league, you need them all fully fit. And unfortunately, we've had some freak injuries this year to some top players. And it's a hard ask to throw five or six young boys into a team, especially against teams like Queen's Park and Edinburgh City and that are all really experienced teams that have been together for a few years. So I think you're right. We do play good football. The ability's there, and we've just fell short for one reason or another.
I think in that game, I think they've brought Simon Murray off the bench and maybe Ross McLean or something. I think you've obviously brought McGuigan on, who's kind of experienced player, but I think it was maybe the boy Josh Gregor and maybe Cammy Graham that came on, and like you said, decent players, but not much experience to kind of see us through. But I thought he's played well in that game. I like Blair and Tappan in the middle of the park, and middle to front, you were decent. Like I say, just kind of the last 5 minutes, I think that stopped you getting a result there.
We thought with that strike force, you know, yourself, Biabi and McGuigan, you'd be right up there when we're predicting the season. But at the back as well, I was going to ask you how much of a loss will Andy Munro be, because he always strikes me as a real leader, a real heartbeat of the team every time I've seen him play. And I know, obviously, what happens with the season anyway, but I'm a bit of a fan of him.
Yeah, Andy will be a massive loss. He was obviously our captain. He set examples. As you said, he was a natural leader. So he'll be a massive loss to us. But I think he made a decision that I think he gets security, a 2.5-year deal at Forfar that he couldn't get staying house Muir. So players do have to look after ourselves first and foremost. So understand his decision to leave. I'm sad to lose him. But again, it's just an opportunity for somebody else to come in.
What's your opinion of sort of League One and League Two being suspended at the moment? Just from a player's point of view, when you look at the likes of Championship being allowed to continue, and the Championship always containing a couple of part-time teams as well, as a player, how do you react to that? How do you kind of, what's your opinion on that, basically?
I've got a different opinion to quite a lot of my teammates. I think we were right to shut down when we did, because without going too in-depth, obviously the COVID cases were rising, and obviously part-time boys, you're working with X amount of folk per day. Like, I'm self-employed and I'm in probably 10 different houses a day as a plumber. Then you're going into training to then mix with 20-odd boys. And just at that point, I think it was right to shut down. But I think with the clubs coming out saying that they're willing to test now, I don't understand why we shouldn't be able to go back. Because Steny were like really strict on their COVID protocols. I think there was one match day I turned up, and I borrowed my girlfriend's hat, a Tammy, and it was too tight for me. And when I turned up, they take my temperature, and I was too hot, and he wouldn't let me in the stadium. And he was seriously, and he was like, "If you don't cool down in 10 minutes, you're away home." So that's how serious we were taking it. It wasn't like a sort of half.
Funny you say that. As part of my scouting duties, I was at your game against Livingston, and I had the same concern as well. I had to lift up the Tammy to get the temperature taken, but Steny is a great example of how stringently those lower league clubs are taking it. It was a really great system. You felt really secure, and I don't know how you feel, but if you ever felt, you know, any concerns as a player, but I certainly felt that you would have to be really irresponsible to kind of make an arse of it, if you will, because obviously the clubs had, for me, put everything in place for you.
Yeah, totally. As I said, Steny, I've been on the ball with it, and they don't take it lightly. But then just another side of that argument, one that I felt as well that I didn't like with it, is you were turning up to train and you were getting changed in a frozen cold stand. You were going out to train, getting changed in the stand, driving home for half an hour until you could get a shower. And see, during the winter when it's -5 and you've been working all day, it wasn't really enjoyable. So there's other aspect where, well, until things can sort of improve or the weather improves, in December and January there, start of January, it was horrible. Do you know what I mean? Because it was really, really frosty, and you're finishing training with the sweat beating off you, and you can't go in and get a shower.
We had Stuart Brown on. He was talking about away teams dressing in like the opposite stand in two different rooms and that. Do you think there's much you've missed out on, even training and not being able to change together or travel together? Do you think you're missing out on like just a bit of the camaraderie in that you'd normally get? Because that must be a massive part of playing football.
1,000%.
Getting all the lads about in
that. I think for me now, just I'm a wee bit more experienced. The biggest thing that probably keeps me going is the changing room, getting right. amongst the boys, getting a good laugh in the changing room and all that. And this season, we've not had that. And I'll openly admit, I've not enjoyed that side of it. You turn up, as I say, you get changed in a stand, you go out. And I think like when you're part-time, you train twice a week and you're there to work hard. And you notice in the warm-up, boys were wanting to have a laugh and catch up. Then you're actually getting, for your fitness coach, he's getting on your case because you're talking in the warm-up, but you've not had a chance to speak to boys. So, as I said, like, I've personally not enjoyed that side of things. Obviously grateful that we got back to play, but there is parts of it that isn't great, if I'm being perfectly honest.
See, when I had a look, Greg, you played Elgin on the 19th of December. Man sent off 2-0 defeat. How was that with no showers and just coming back in the bus? That must have just, what was the weather like? Baltic, aye. And then
aye.
Being beat, like you say, no showers. Did they even give you food? Like, you got to eat that in the bus? Like, what? Must have been terrible coming back for that one, especially.
Well, usually when you go away to Elgin, you get pre-match at usually a cafe or a hotel on the way up, and like hot food. But this time we weren't allowed to stop anywhere, so it was like a cold chicken pasta that somebody had made, and thankful for their efforts, but it wasn't ideal. Then you're on the bus, you can't sit next to anyone, you've got to have your mask on. Then obviously when you get up there, you play for 90 minutes, frozen cold, just been beat, the mud everywhere, then no shower and you're just straight back in a bus, and that's what I'm saying, it's not ideal.
It's a risk as well, eh? Because Stuart Brown told us that when Stan Alvin played Ross County in the Betfred, they went up and they were distanced on the bus, but one boy had COVID and two boys got told, they tested negative, but they got told they had to isolate because they were near him on the bus. You're self-employed, so that would have been you at the game not earning for 10 days, eh?
Well, that is one of the biggest things that I'm worried about is after Elgin, because I'm sure we had two players that chose to drive up just so they could eliminate. Mark McGuigan was one of them, just to totally eliminate the chance of that. And then probably in hindsight, I should have done it, because you're right, if you had to self-isolate and it puts you out of work for 2 weeks or 10 days, it would have really, really cost me.
I've seen even the Livy boys are driving to the cup final themselves on Saturday. All different situation, obviously they're not self-employed, but the manager doesn't want them ruled out for 10 days, so they're going to a cup final on Saturday driving themselves. It's crazy. Yeah. But that's a commitment for boys like McGuigan to drive himself up, play 90 minutes and then drive back down.
No, absolutely.
If you are self-employed.
Pardon?
It needs must, though, if you are self-employed. You've got to...
Absolutely. And that is the worry is... Because I'm sure there's a couple of times where folk go and get a test and you're like, well, if they come back positive, we're all wiped out here. And thankfully, I think it was a couple of negatives we had. But you're right. So I don't think there's going to be an ideal situation with it. But...
That's a perfect... Your job, that's a perfect example of a really, really good argument as to maybe why, you know, the caution was the right thing to do, because like you say, you'll be in and out of houses all day and your livelihood depends on that. So that's a really interesting like angle you're coming from that maybe some people, not everyone would think of. I don't want to get like too hung up on the COVID stuff because it gets a bit depressing. But just lastly on that area, we were just wondering how players keep fit, keep sharp during the league suspension, and like is how much responsibility is placed on yourself as a part-time player to try and keep yourself fit? Is there any other things the club can do for you?
Well, we just got a fitness coach, Paul Green. He came in. He's like I'm sure he's ex-Navy. So he came in and his fitness stuff.
Is that the guy that was at Hibs?
Yeah.
I've heard about him, but I've never met him. He's maybe decent.
He's good. He's a good character. So he's came in and he drills it into us to keep fit. And as a part-time player, it's your own responsibility, because at the end of the day, if you don't keep yourself fit away from the club, it's you that gets affected. And at the end of the season, it's you that's then not either playing or getting a new contract. So I've always kept up my fitness extra away from the two nights we do. But recently, when we first shut down there in January, I had a couple of weeks off, just a couple of weeks rest, because we had played sort of half a season. Then done a couple of weeks just ticking over. Then the week with the snow, obviously you couldn't get out running. And I hit like a sort of a proper depression with it. And I was like rock bottom. And it was so hard to then pick myself back up off the couch again to get back out running. And thankfully, I managed to go and I'm back in that routine. Because as footballers, since 4 year old, all you do is play football three times a week, four times a week. And now that gets taken away from you and that's all you ever know. So for me, having 1 week off when it was a bad snow totally set me back. But just thankfully, I managed to get back into that routine I've always been used to, and I'm away again. But we get given fitness plans, and it's good now you can record it all in Strava in groups and that. So it has really came on. And as I said, you got Paul in your case every day if you don't do it, which you do need. You need somebody to just be keeping that sort of eye over you to keep you going. Yeah. So it's, but I know a lot of boys are finding it tough. Because like tonight, well, today I've worked all day, got in at the back of five, then had to go a run because it's a night for a run. So I went out and done a 5K, then you're back in, and before you know it, it's 7:30 at night. But
how long do you think you'd need to get up to fitness? Because Stuart Brown was telling us that they didn't estimate it being that long, but if they're like, right, you can start playing again on this date, how long do you think you would, or your team, you and the boys, rather than just yourself?
If I'm being honest, I think you need 4 weeks, because just say we finished the end of December there, and just I think to go into a competitive game, you need 4 weeks, maybe 2 weeks training, then maybe two or three friendlies. Because ask any player, no matter how hard your pre-season is or how fit you think you are, the minute you go into your first pre-season game in the summer, it's like you've never ran in your life before. Honestly, it's the worst feeling ever. And honestly, I've had pre-seasons where I've been, well, thinking I'm the fittest I've ever been. Then you go into the first game, and it could be against a lower league team at home that you're not maybe working as hard, but still you just, it's like you can't sprint. It's like, then the risk of injury goes up as well. Because you start trying to do things that your body's not used to. And so I do think we do have to be careful. We don't just rush back in to get games for the sake of it, or you'll get boys breaking down.
Especially when you're having to do a shift off the left now, eh?
I don't know where that's came from, but it's totally different to what I'm used to.
How are you finding it out there? One of the questions actually just on that is, do you think your career suffered, not necessarily at Steny obviously, because managers tend to only play one out and out striker these days. I've always thought Greg played better as part of a front two, but that opportunities are sometimes limited in that way. So do you prefer playing in a two or a one? And do you think over time, like the fans said here, that managers only playing one up tops maybe affected your game?
You could say so, because when I first sort of started playing with Raith Rovers when I was 21, it was a 4-4-2, two strikers. It was me, Brian Graham, and then the following year it was Callum Elliott, Gordon Smith, and it was a two, and that's probably when I felt in games that you got lots of chances and whatever, whereas after that it started more going as a one up front. I don't mind the one up front, because a lot of folk think you've got to be a target man that wins headers and all that, but I think if you can run in behind and win fouls and take your team up the park, I think you're doing a good job for the team. But you're probably right, it's tough as a striker, because before maybe teams would sign three strikers for the season, now they might only sign two or one and go away sort of number 10s and wingers and that. And so it is ever changing, but that's one thing.
For you as well, I suppose, because see, being at Alloa in the Championship, like due respect to Alloa, they're maybe going to, against the so-called bigger teams, they're maybe going to go a 4-5-1 or a 4-1-4-1 or something to get men behind the ball. So it's a shift up there when you're up there on your own, eh?
Aye, absolutely. And as a striker, the type of player I am, I'm never going to get the ball, take on two men and put it in the top corner for 20 yards. And I think if you're up against it as a lone striker, that's when you do need to have that wee bit extra something that can win you games. Whereas my the most goals I've scored in a season was when I played as a one for Alloa, but that was in League One, and we dominated the ball, and it was
16-17 or about then, eh?
About then.
You bagged a lot for Cowden Beef the year before that as well.
Yeah, well, that's one of the questions that you sent me through was best strike partners. I played with Gordon Smith for about 4 or 5 months, and as a two, and his style complemented me so well, and he got the best out of me.
Livy and Hearts and that, or
yeah, he went away to Australia after Cowden Beef, but his style just totally complemented my game, and that brought like the best out of me. So it probably answers the question that I do better with a striker that complements my game if I can complement his game. Whereas I played with Liam Buchanan a few times in different teams, and as much as we're really similar strikers, I don't think we play well together because he needs somebody to feed him for goals, and I need somebody to feed me, and he's not interested in passing to me. So, like, honestly, Buck's a good boy, but we just cut each other's throats type thing. So it really, if you're going to play a two, you need two strikers that complement each other.
Do you feel you combine well with McGuigan, with him being a kind of target man type player who'll hold up the ball?
Tommy Muir as well, happy to take it in, isn't he?
Yeah, that's the thing. Big Markey, big strong boy, really good player, and I've not had really the chance to play as a two with him yet, because I think he was out of the team for whatever reason at the start of the season, and he managed to get himself back in because he was bagging the goals again. But him, Tommy Muir, and that, they're the type of boys you do want to play up there with, ones that can rattle defenders, and you're just getting the breaks of the balls, wee flick-ons or whatnot, so I'm really looking forward to playing with him when we get back.
See, looking at the Simons, I was wondering how yous were all going to get shoehorned into the team. I was thinking if they're going 4-4-2, they've got some options to bring on and off the bench and to chop and change. But I was quite surprised, to be fair, when, because Biabi's playing off the right, isn't he? Generally, you're off the left, and it's either you or McGuigan through the middle.
Yeah, it's, we changed the shape quite a lot, to be fair. And the manager just said to me that he likes the job I do out there. He was like, you do the other side of the game, working hard and tracking for the team. And when he's openly said, when we've got sort of younger boys in the midfield due to injuries and that, you need a bit of experience in there that's going to talk to boys and whatever. So I don't mind jumping out the left.
Did they tell you that before you signed?
Aye. but I generally don't mind that. I'm just happy to be playing this Saturday. However, there does come a time where you want to be playing your best position and scoring goals, and because when folk then start to look at your stats and be like, oh, he's not as good as what he used to be, or oh, he's lost it, and it's like, well, I've been standing out the left wing all season, so I would like to play up front, but again, whenever the manager picks me, I'm going to play happily.
See, just before I go back to Muzz, see with the protocols in, obviously Goldie and Davy Irons are on the touchline now. See when you're on the left, the game I was at, it was like Goldie was man marking you up and down the touchline because they're over on another side now, aren't they, in front of the tunnel. So he was like chasing you up and down the line. But... Sorry, Muzz.
No, that's all right. Just to sort of go back to the start of your career, Greg, obviously you broke through at Alloa, Athletic Rangers youth, and you got a move to Celtic, reported the 100,000 they paid. Also, there was rumoured to be a lot of other big clubs interested from England. Did any of those actually contact you as well as Celtic?
The only ones that I remember at the time, because it was one of the things that was happening that fast and everything was so exciting, the only one I can remember was when I was in signing sort of my contract to finalise it. I'm sure it was Burnley at that point. I don't even know if they were in the Premiership at the time. I doubt it. They apparently came in, but that's the only one I heard of. That was right at the last minute, and I'd already decided I was wanting to sign there. It's funny, I was telling this story on, I done an interview for Rovers TV the other week there. And when I signed with Alloa at 15-year-old, I seen that as my sort of last chance if I was ever going to make anything of myself in football, because I was at Rangers youth. I went to Hibs, I had a wee spell at Falkirk, and it just felt it was going downhill. Confidence, rock bottom. Went into Alloa under 15s, and the youth system they had at the time gave me the confidence, and the coaches I had there gave me the confidence. And a year later, I was playing in the first team. Then 6 months later, I was away at Celtic. So it just shows you that in the space of 18 months, I went from thinking I was just going to go back and play in my mates' boys' club to obviously moving for that sort of money.
Yeah, good message for any like young players whose heads might dip a bit. You know, it's a good example. When you went to Celtic, who were you rubbing shoulders with in that youth team? Who's like your age group there?
Well, I remember when I was signing, they were like, "We've got a boy, James Forrest, that we think he's going to be the one that'll break through. He's excellent." So James Forrest was in my team. Callum McGregor was the year below me, but he was in our team as well, who's obviously went on to do very well.
Then, did you go straight through them two in training first day?
Aye. Well, it's quite funny, because I'd been playing first team at Alloa, I thought I was going to go into Celtic 19s at the point and be the sort of, not the star man, but I thought, like, I've came from men's football, like, I went into our pre-season and I was 1,000 miles away from, like, I'm sure they had just finished a full-time pre-season at that time, and I'd came from Alloa's pre-season part-time, and I was a million, honestly, so far off it. But yeah, players like James Keatons, Declan Gallagher, Lewis Toshney, Stephen O'Donnell, Robbie Thompson. So out of that team, the amount that are kicking about the leagues is quite high.
Yeah, that's a high roll call, that, isn't it? You've played for obviously a lot of teams, and you've always been in amongst the goals wherever you've been. We sort of talked about your career highs a wee bit and some of your favourite spells, but you've obviously played under a lot of managers. Is there any managers that stand out to you? I think I saw you talking to Jim Goodwin at the game I was at. I think it was it the Livy game. I think he was looking at Livy ahead of a cup game, and is it no surprise to see him doing quite well after being at Alloa?
Yeah, totally. I think that was his idea, was he was coming to Alloa to play, then hopefully get a shot at the manager's job whenever that may have been. And this is another story I was telling about him. It was quite funny. So he tried to continue to play when he got the job. So for the first 3 or 4 games, we were on a sort of wee bad run when he took over. Then one game we're winning and he got himself sent off it was a shocking challenge, you know what he's like. So then he comes back from his suspension and we're picked up I'm sure we won our 3 games while he was suspended. So he comes back in and it was quite an important game. I'm sure it was actually against Stenhouse Muir at the time. And he said to us at half time, he was like, "Look, we go out, we win the second half, we keep the head, blah, blah, nobody, nothing daft." And 2 minutes into the second half, he goes like that, elbows a boy, gets himself sent off. So he went away after that, and he had a meeting with us, and he was like, "Look, I'm going to concentrate on the manager's job from now on and not bother about playing." And I think that was the best thing he'd done, because as a player, he's borderline psychotic. He's honestly that. He's a madman on the pitch. Whereas as a manager, he's the polar opposite. He's so cool, calm, collected. Everything's well thought out. He's well spoken. I think only once I've seen him lose his temper, whereas you would think he would maybe be a screamer and a shouter because the type of player he was. So it's no surprise to see him obviously do well at Alloa and get his move to St Mirren, and now he's absolutely flying. But as I say, that's the type of player he was to the manager is polar opposite.
He must have been joining a training a couple of times or standing on some toes and giving his elbows when he was still no playing. He's getting involved, showing you how it's done.
Well, I think that was the biggest thing was he came to Alloa and obviously he dropped down from the Premiership at the time. And I think he thought he was going to come down and be a sort of cut above. And the boys that Alloa have had over the last few years, your Kevin Colley's, your Alan Troutons, your Flanagan's, Andy Graham's, they're right top players. And I think he actually struggled with the tempo when he first came in. And I think it took him, I think he was in shock a wee bit at the standard. And I think he openly admits that as well. So I think that gives credit to the boys at Alloa that even though he's had a career at the top level, it's not as easy as just stepping down at the end of your career to sort of have a wee swan song, because I think he realised that wasn't going to be the case.
Mm-hmm.
I used to love going to Alloa, to be fair, when it was Flanagan and Heverington in the middle of the park, man. It just passed boys to death, eh?
Oh, absolutely.
How did they never play higher? Did they not? Have they got good jobs at WIF, or did you think teams never took a gamble? Because both of them technically Premier League easily, I think.
Flanagan, 1,000%. He's probably the best part-time player I've played with. His ability was so far ahead of anyone else. I think with him, he had a couple of injuries when he first came to Alloa. And I think you can sort of get brushed at times as a part-time player. And you see full-time players that jump between all the teams in the Championship like a goldfish bowl, whereas there's boys kicking about in the part-time leagues, even in League 2, that are just as good, if not better, than the boys.
I think he's got that way, Flanagan. He looks like he isn't trying. Like, is he against the ball? Like, he's quite laid back, eh? And even in it, he'll get on it and he'll move it. And obviously, effectively, and that's just his style. But I think, sometimes if boys were to watch him, he wouldn't look necessarily like he likes doing the dirty against the ball. But he does, but he just doesn't look like he does, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think he's definitely one that, because I'm sure it was when I re-signed with Rafe after I left Alloa, and boys were asking about certain players, and I was talking about, raving about them. They were like, never really seen it or heard of him. And I'm like, nah. I was like, for the last 3-4 years, he's been the best player in League One by a country mile. Him, Kev Colley, you mentioned it, Steve Heverington. I could go all day. They've had a Corey boys for the last decade that sort of came and went, and that's how they've had so much success.
And see, just on managers before I go back to Muzz, was it Billy Reid that took you to Hamilton? How was he? Because he was well thought of, and he's obviously assistant at Brighton now, isn't he?
Aye, so it was him that took me to Hamilton alone for a season. But if I'm being honest, I was only 19 at the time, and it feels a different lifetime ago, if you know what I mean. I just felt a young boy back then, and had an experience there, and as far as I can remember, he was good with me. He was really chirpy in that, but I can't go into too much detail because I can't, if I'm being honest, I can't really remember that too well. But just to touch on, just to finish, Jack Ross is by far the best manager I've worked under. He's destined for good things. Everything from his training to the way he carries his cell, the way he makes the full group, not just the starting 11, feel like they're wanted at a club. Working under him, it was only about 5 months, I think, but he was absolutely brilliant and he was getting the best out of me. And it's, again, no shock that he's moved on to better things.
I was surprised a wee bit. He kind of struggled a wee bit at Sunderland, didn't he? But I think it's just a different gravy going down there. And I was speaking to somebody that knows him, and just, I think obviously with them being based in Sunderland, they were like getting a bus down to London to play a game, bus back up on a Saturday night, and then a game on a Tuesday down in like Cardiff or something. And so, but he's doing well at Hibs, isn't he? So hopefully see him back kicking on soon.
Oh, definitely. His biggest thing was on the training park. He just made training brilliant. Like, you actually look forward to going into training, and everything was high tempo, and it was just, you could just tell that Alloa was a stepping stone for him at that point. He was going to move on to better things.
How did you find playing under Dick Campbell at Arbroath? Because he always seems like a good crack to play under, but obviously we know how seriously he takes the football and how he takes it on game day. But you got any stories around him about Dick Campbell? Or?
That's the funny thing, is my year at Arbroath, personally on the pitch, didn't go well at all. And I'll hold my hands up, I wasn't anywhere near the standards I should have been at, but it was the funniest and most enjoyable year of my life because the environment that Dick creates. And I could be here all day talking about his stories, and he's absolutely, as you say, he's mental, but there's also that sort of, he says the phrase, there's time to work, time to play. And when the serious head goes on, it is a switch, and you've got to be serious. Because I remember my first game for Arbroath, they were away to Raith Rovers, and it was a sort of top of the league clash through its starts, like a really massive game. Was it my first game? It might have been. They froze me in for the start, but anyway, we turned up and you're used to big long team talks, tactics, blah, blah. And him and his brother Ian Pink, spent 35 minutes talking about Magaluf and stories from Magaluf. Honestly, I kid you not, and you're sitting there, and honestly, it's so funny, and you're looking around, and you're like, you're about to go and play like a massive game, and I was like, what's going on here? And it got to, and it kept going, you're like, nah, we should be out warming up now. So they're still telling this story, and just at the end, it was like, ah, he's all be wanting the team now, named the team, then walked out, and you're like...
is that him just going with the flow, do you think? Or is that a psychological tactic to relax you before you go out or something like that? Is it just the way he is?
No, I think he knows exactly what he's doing, because honestly, you looked forward to his team talks. Like, he'd go in, and at times it's like, I wouldn't say a comedy sketch, but it's like a comedy sketch, him and his brother just bouncing off each other. And before you know it, you forgot about the game, you're relaxed, you're laughing. Then right at the end of it, that's when the serious stuff comes out and whatnot. And like, you can't argue against his record. It's unbelievable.
Oh,
yeah.
And was Doris, Stephen Doris there? Because see, for the outside looking in, Dor would have been like the perfect strike partner for you. I would have thought, like, as a neutral, because obviously he can plant himself, he'll occupy centre half, so take the ball in. And was he there when you were there? Did you ever get a run together? Or?
Aye, so Dor was there when I signed, but I'm sure at that point they had two strikers that were playing every week. I'm sure it was Ryan Wallace and Luke Donnelly. Then they had Dor there, but then I'm sure he was had a few injuries, so they then brought me in. But they were doing that well in the league when I first went in. They were, I'm sure it was 12 points clear, and they were absolutely flying. And it was one of them. It's like, well, what more can I sort of offer this team? And I just never got off to a good start. And I played a couple of times with Orn, as you said, the styles really matched and whatnot. And he's probably a bit unlucky. Again, it was the form of the boys that were playing. But the way Dick is, he's tough to please. So... You've got to be right at it every week, and he's one of them, like, just say you go through and go and miss a chance, but you've maybe like created it yourself. He's no bothered about that. He's just saying, well, you've no scored. Do you know what I mean? He's black and white at times, and it was just one of the things. As I said, I've nothing bad to say about him. I'll hold my hands up and be, it's the only club I've been at where I've not done myself justice. I've not shown what I could properly do. And that's through my own sort of fault. But as I said, I absolutely love working under him, and you could do a full podcast on Dick Campbell himself. He's honestly quality, and even my first night of training there, I couldn't believe the environment I'd walked into. It was like their youngie that's their coach, that they're a wee trio, and I keep saying comedy sketch. It's like it's this big jolly up, but it's like you're working hard, but at the same time, you're just laughing and joking for an hour and a half. Before you know it, training's finished, and you're like, you're away down the road. So I think just the environment that he creates is fantastic. And if you look at his record, he wins every week, doesn't he? Really, the last 10 years.
So Greg, talking of Arbroath, it's Gayfield's obviously one of the most symbolic stadiums of Scottish football. I think it's like the closest to the sea in Europe or something like that. So we were just going to ask you, as a player, what's the kind of best and worst stadium you've played in? Because obviously we've been on the sidelines. We get a view from, you know, the sidelines and things like that. But is there any stadiums that you've had some, you think, oh, this is an absolute dump, or these are great facilities? Any kind of quirks with different stadiums?
It's funny you say that. I quite like, because obviously Albion Rovers at Clifton, is it Cliftonville or Clifton Hall, whatever it is, that gets quite a bad rep. Cowden Beef Stadium gets quite a bad rep. But places like this, I really enjoy going to, because it's old school. It's like going down to Somerset Park at Ayr. It's got the old school feel about it. It's grass pitches, it's proper football, and when you go down there, the changing rooms aren't nice, and it's always frozen, and it's always tight, and the showers are always brutal after a game. But I enjoy that side of things, whereas maybe going to an Airdrie where it's a bit soulless and it's a big massive AstroTurf pitch, and I do prefer the smaller pitches, like Gayfield, when there's no wind. But they get quite a bad rep, but I quite enjoy it. It changes up, because I think you get bored of just sort of soulless big AstroTurf pitches.
It's tight at Annan A, and Berwick Rangers is tight as well, man. Like,
that's the thing. I think Cowden Beef's the smallest. Like, I think you can shoot for the halfway line and have a good chance of scoring. But again, it's, I had a season there and I absolutely,
that's Craig Barr did recently, by the way.
Do you get used to playing on that though? Because it's a tatty field for everyone. So is it a leveller for both teams, or do you think you actually get used to, like, aye, there's a divot over there and aye, that's going to no bounce there, like, or is it just, it's just a rotten pitch for all 22 boys?
Well, obviously, I think if you can't adapt to it, that's what lets teams down. Like, we went to Elgin Rovers at the start of the season, and again, the pitch wasn't great, and they were trying to play out for the back, and it was bobbling up, and before you know it, we were a few goals up and out of sight. Whereas we didn't take chances at the back that day, we just got it forward and played in their half. And I think that's where a lot of teams go wrong, especially at Arbroath. It's always windy going down the pitch, and teams turn up to Arbroath and they try and play out for their 18-yard box, and they never get their own half. Whereas if you watch Arbroath, they get the ball forward, not just hopeful long balls, but it's getting the ball up the park and playing out of their own half, and that's how they do so well. Whereas teams turn up to these grounds and they don't adapt to this situation, like the circumstances, and that's how it's tough to go to these places.
See, talking about going to grounds, taking the facilities out of it, is there any teams that you've maybe scored against in the past and you look forward to going there, or is there any grounds that you think, oh, I've had a beast here, like the last three games, I'm no fancy in this? Is there any, like I say, is there any places that you like going to in terms of you feel confident going there?
Confident, I'm trying to think.
Would it be a ground with like good memories? Would you look forward to going back there, like taking the facility side of things with it?
Well, I really like playing at Starks Park at Raith Rovers. As a obviously player for them, but against them, I always had a good record going back there and scoring, because again, it's got the old school feel about it. But again, there was a few pitches a few years ago, like Livingston's. Anytime you played Livingston, it was a big, massive pitch, and you were going for a tough game. And some teams just know when you're going to get a few chances. Some teams, you know, it's going to be few and far between. So, as I said about Airdrie, that was another one. You turn up there, and there was a spell where they had a really good team, and you knew it was just going to be a tough, tough game, and you just didn't really enjoy it. Whereas on the flip side, you go to an Albion Rovers, and you just know you're going to get chances. It's going to be mayhem. So as a striker, it's more enjoyable.
And obviously when the fans are in it, they're closer to you at places like Albion. And do you enjoy you can hear the shouts, do you enjoy that side of it, the abuse or the criticism or whatever?
Aye, absolutely, because I think at the lower levels, it's not as serious. So as much as you get abuse for the opposition fans, they're having a laugh with it as well.
Some of them are quite funny, eh?
Whereas obviously you see it in the sort of top league, it's fans get too serious with players and it turns toxic. Whereas if you shout you back at a fan in League Two, they just start laughing. Do you know what I mean? It turns into a sort of running joke, which I quite like. But again, Albion Rovers, feels like I'm going on about them. We were playing there with Cowden Beef when I was there, what was it, 4 years ago, 5 years ago, and a pit bull ran on the pitch while we were playing. And I kid you not, we were both fighting relegation at the time, and Albion Rovers were through and goal at this point, and the pit bulls actually ran in and stopped the game as the boy was through and goal. And you're like, and nobody could catch it, and it was running about, and eventually it just disappeared, and you're like, what the hell's going on here?
Will you go looking for some fans to give you a bit of stick or that to try and get you going on the pitch? Or do you think you didn't need that, and it's just background noise for you?
I think now it's background noise, but I used to always love playing against Dunfermline because I'm from Dunfermline. And obviously I played with Raith Rovers and Cowden Beef. I used to get dogs abuse, and going to East End, which is obviously a fantastic stadium, and it was always big crowds, getting the abuse gave you that wee sort of bit more adrenaline, that wee edge to sort of do better. So I used to love that side of things. But then on the flip side, I remember when I was at Hamilton on loan when I was 19, we played St Mirren away in the Scottish Cup, and I played for 60 minutes, hopeless, got subbed. And as I'm walking off, like, the abuse I was getting off the small Hamilton fans at that point, but my gran and granddad were in the crowd that day. And obviously they want the best for you, but you're getting absolutely abused off all these like grown men. So that side gets horrible. But I think now that I'm older and wiser and it's not as serious, I do prefer it.
Do you have an opinion on plastic pitches, or do you just sort of take it in your stride? Obviously, you're a fan of the old school stadiums, which I'm delighted to hear, because I'm the same myself. But do you just see plastic pitches in part and parcel of the game these days, like? Or?
I think they've got a purpose, because, like, for Alloa, they've got their plastic pitch. Every fight's the same as Stenhouse Muir. Your training's all at the stadium. Obviously, you train it all season, you play on it, and you know your games are going to be on. And it is, there are, like, Stenhouse Muir is a wee bit older now, but it's a true surface. Whereas, as much as I say I like the grass pitches, there has been some games you turn up and the grass is unplayable. It's just a swamp. And sometimes it works for a good game, and sometimes, no matter how hard you try, you're just running on sort of quicksand. So I think there's definitely a purpose for them, and I think it's good that quite a lot of teams have got them, because on the Tuesday, if the weather's bad, you know your game's still going to be on, so you can look forward to it.
Just lastly, before we get on to a few more of the fan questions, Greg, we're going to ask you if you can sort of, it's a bit of a contentious one, but if you could throw together a best 11 of players you've ever played with throughout your career, would you be willing to have a stab at that?
I'll try and have a stab at the top of my head.
What's your formation, first of all?
Can I put myself in it? No, is that not how it works?
Aye, get yourself.
Of course, sir.
Left midfield.
tricky wire. I think the best goalie I've played with, and again, I'm going to just speak about my senior clubs, not youth team, was Dave McGurn at Raith Rovers. He was absolutely fantastic.
He was still on the books recently, wasn't he?
Yeah, I'm sure he went back as a coach and whatnot, and just the type of guy he is, he was a cut above. I played with quite a lot of good goalies for like the level, but you could tell he was a cut above. Then moving on, thinking about a right back, I played with Jason Thompson for years, who's arguably the best part-time right back that in the last decade in the Championship League One level. But I'd probably pick my best 11 on players that would get me goals. So Scott Taggart at Alloa was unbelievable at getting you goals for right back by whipping balls into the box. So unfortunately, I'd not name Jason Thompson, who's a good friend of mine, but I'll put Tags in. And left back Mark Docherty, who we spoke about before, he thinks he's a midfielder, but he's never been a midfielder. He's a good left back. And again, he gets you goals, puts crosses into the box, and as a striker, that's what you need. So he'd going at left back. Then my two centre backs would be Andy Graham and Dougie Hill. Andy Graham's the best professional I've ever came across, and as a guy, he's an absolute gem of a guy. The standards he demands from everyone, he's a proper leader, and it's no shock that year in, year out, even at his age, he's still producing quality performances for Alloa in the Championship. And obviously Dougie Hill was just an old school centre back that I used to hate playing against, because he's a head it, kick it, nick you type guy. Again, Dougie's a good friend of mine.
Is he a Brechin still now,
No, he's staying for Kelty.
But
the only thing with Dougie is he goes off injured with cramp after 60 minutes every week. But honestly, he's an absolute animal. And he used to always text me before games, because we've played against each other countless times. He'd always text me on the Friday night and just say, "Get off the tracks, the train's coming." And honestly, seriously. And the next day, or on the Saturday, you just knew 5 minutes in, a long ball up to you, and all you hear is Doogies, and he comes, and he's not even trying to win the ball, he's just trying to leave an elbow and knee into you and just flatten you in the first five. So I'd have Doogie in my team all day long.
Decent mix there with him and Andy Graham, to be fair, because Andy can play a bit, eh?
Andy can play, and it's funny, folk are shocked at that, but he could play any position, he could play up front. Mm-hmm. He's that technically that good. Moving on to the midfield, I think I would have to put Ian Flanagan in. Absolutely fantastic player. We spoke about him. Then you could pick probably five or six Alloa midfielders from my spells there and throw them in, from Stephen Simmons, Ryan McCord, to Kevin Colley, Graham Holmes. It's...
Was Kirkpatrick there when you were there? Did you miss him?
Kirky was there under Jack Ross, and he was absolutely flying.
I mind see when you used to go and watch Alloa, going off topic here. See, about apart from McCord, they were all about the same height, all with dark hair, and they all just popped them all for fun, and you're like, I wouldn't know what he is here. They're just popping it about, man.
Well, that's the thing with Stephen Simmons. I'd played against him, and again, he was a bit like Dougie. He would leave one on you and get involved with you and quite intimidating. And I turned up at Alloa, and what a player he was. Like, keeping the ball and, like, taking off his goalie on his 18-yard box with three men round him. He'd happily take it, turn and go and spray the passes, and you're like, bloody hell, like, brilliant, like, generally brilliant. So, now I put Simmy in because the year I had with him, I was really impressed with him. So, I'd go Simmy, Kev Colley and Flanny as my three in midfield.
And then you've got yourself up top with two others.
Aye, I've got to be Gordon Smith for the partnership we had. Absolutely brilliant. And for somebody to compliment us even further, Alan Troughton, 1,000%. Trouts is a magician, seriously, like, absolutely brilliant. And he's one that would, he scores goals, but he also gets you goals.
He seems to have been equally effective. It's playing deeper now, that, you know what I mean? You can still play, you can still knock it about in midfield, but he's still in amongst the goals as well. He seems to have a bit of everything now.
I think he just got a real sort of hunger for goals, but because his ability is that good, he can drop deeper, get in the half turn, create things, but he's just got that desire to get in the box. It's a bit like Frank Lampard, sort of back in his day, always just trying to hit that box at the right time, and that's what Trouts has got. Very rarely he's trying to get across the front post. He's hanging out for a cutback, and it's some very intelligent player, very intelligent player.
And who's the manager that's going to set that formation up to get you the goals? Are you going Jack Ross, or have you got someone else up your sleeve?
Dick Campbell would, if you were wanting a good laugh, it would be Dick Campbell. But Jack Ross would bring the best look of that team, 1,000%.
To be fair, it seems to have the Dick Campbell culture to be fair. There's a few winners, a few elbows flying about. So
that team's comfortably top half championship, eh? Like, when everyone, like, if you took everyone when you played with them at the time.
At their peak, 1,000%. Aye, totally. And a lot of good players that I have played with it, I've probably not mentioned. All the boys at Arbroath that's in their squad now, they've got 15 in a squad that are all, for the level they're at, absolutely brilliant. Like, I left out Thomas O'Brien, who's probably one of the best centre-backs in the Championship right now.
He's Rolls-Royce whenever I've seen him play.
He's absolute quality. But again, because I didn't really play as much that year, I don't really want to put the Arbroath boys in it, just for that.
There's not many boys out there. Was it the Ramsden's Cup it was called at that time when he's beat Rangers? There's not many boys at that team, is there? Hill was it that he was at Rafe at the time, wasn't he, with you? Yeah. But just see, before we come back to the other fans' questions, just while we're on that Ramsden's Cup, obviously beating Rangers. Did you come on at the start of extra time, is that right?
Yeah, so I came on at the start of extra time, that's right, yeah.
Did you fancy it going into it? Like, honestly, did you think you would get a result? Or as the game started going, did you start to believe? Or what was your kind of mindset for that?
I don't think we were on a great run going into it. But obviously, it's a massive cup final for us, and the build-up and that, you do believe you've got a chance. And it was just important we stayed in the game. But the longer it was 0-0, and the way what Rangers were going through at the time and that, you just sort of knew we've got a chance here.
Were you up against Big
Moshney
in that game?
Aye, Big Moshney.
What was he like to play against? He's one that looks a bit like a lunatic as well, man.
Aye, he was a bit of an animal, but if you can remember the goal, it's him sliding all over, me and him basically rolling about trying to get this ball, and I get up before him, like, just totally crazy. But what was funny about the Ramses Cup final was I went obviously on at the start of extra time. And I'm sure it was after 12 or 13 minutes, or was it after the half time, I got cramp, and I was only on 13 minutes. But I think it's because you went on and just the adrenaline and the tie in that, and you're just given 110%, just constant sprinting, but getting cramp after 13 minutes wasn't great. Like,
I do. Because they had McCulloch and Morsney, so talking about elbows, those two are partial to throwing elbows a bit, to be fair. But a decent team they had, because they had Hutton and John Daly and stuff, as Lee Wallace say. So it was by no means a weak Rangers team, was it?
No, not at all. It was far from it, but their game plan that day was hitting long balls into our box and to John Daly. But Dougie Hull has made, that's his bread and butter, is going and attacking balls, head it and kick it. Do you know what I mean? He would head a boulder. So all Rangers done for 90 minutes was launch it up to him. Dougie won every single ball. He got man in the match in that game, whereas I think if Rangers tried to play a bit more, they would have probably broke us down and scored a few goals. But now they played into our hands that day, which obviously was brilliant.
You got any more questions,
Well, I was just going to move on to the questions from the fans on Twitter. Talking about the other time you beat Rangers, your goal, Brian Roach is asking, was your goal against Ballytown in the Challenge Cup the only goal you scored from outside the penalty area in your career? But I think you've answered that with your point about your winner against Rangers, but can you think of any more?
Well, the Rangers one's touch and go. I think that's on the line. But the Ballytown one, I think it's 127 senior goals I've got in competitive games. And I think it's safe to say that's the only one outside the box. And the only reason for it was 2 minutes before it, John Robertson was shouting at me for giving the ball away. And I was shouting back at him, so I was pissed off. And it was actually out of sort of just been angry. I've hit the shot, whereas I'd usually, I'd never shoot. That's how that came about. But aye, definitely, that's the only one that's really outside the box.
And then we've actually got confirmation because I messaged Alloa stats there just while we were speaking. So you've got 47 goals for Alloa, 93 starts and 38 sub appearances. So you're three short for Alloa, just for the record. So another fan's got in touch saying, ask Greg who was a better player between himself or Pat Scullion.
Was that Pat that asked it?
No, there's a guy called John Glencross. I don't know if you know. It's Allo Athletic Programme Editor, he says on Twitter.
Pat's a really good friend of mine. He'll be buzzing, he's got a mention. but he was at Allo when I first broke into the first team at 16. And he got asked, was he's from Dunfermline as well, here to drive me through because obviously I couldn't drive. And he used to hate the fact that he had to drive me. He was like, who's this wee guy that I've got to drive to training? Then fast forward a few years, he's like one of my best pals. If Pat could have ran, he would have had a great career. But unfortunately, he lost his pace at 19.
Was he a centre half, centre midfielder?
Centre midfielder, centre half. Used to shoot for 40 yards out every game, and managers would go mental. But.
So that Alois Stats has got back, or he'd got in touch as well. Have you got any aspirations to get into management or coach him once you finish playing? And he's put, he thinks you coaches youngsters already, is that right?
Yeah, so from my boys' club that I spent 12 years at as a kid in Markeven Hillfield Swifts, 2.5 years ago I started taking their under-20s with my dad, who's ran kids' football for 25 years. So it's been quite good for me because it's a good age group to get in it. And learning off my dad that's got the experience has been fantastic. So, my life without COVID is usually train twice a week with my own football, Steny or whoever, and then coach two nights a week. Then the 20s play on a Friday night and I play on a Saturday. So, it's just football, football, football. So, the experience I'm getting now with under 20s is only going to help me when I do come to that, because I'm a football guy. I want to stay in football as long as I can. Yeah, I absolutely love it. And they now being able to help the under 20s at the level we're at is one of the best things I've ever done. Being able to give them just maybe that wee bit of guidance from a point of view that maybe a coach that's maybe not played at a higher level can give them. And that's no disrespect to anyone. It's just part of me wishes at maybe that age I had somebody that really wanted to take me by the balls and say, right, do this, do that, and you will see the benefits.
Do you find yourself drifting to help the strikers naturally? Or do you have to rein yourself in and remember that there's centre-halves and midfielders as well?
It's funny you say that, because whenever somebody wants you to maybe go and help out with a session with a team, it's like, oh, take the strikers. But I think being a striker, it's all natural. you can do all the drills in the world through cones and hit shots at goals. It's all about instinct. Whereas I see myself trying to help the defenders more because I'm like,
you see, like, this is what I would. This is what I would do. Here's how to try and stop it.
Aye, 1,000%. Like, it's easier to sort of coach them that way because I know what I hate playing against. I hate when defenders get tight to you, make it difficult, follow you everywhere, keep an eye on you. Whereas as a striker or any front player in my 20s, I want them to just go and express themselves. Go and be confident, go and take folk on, go and huff shots. Whereas trying to coach a striker, I think, is difficult because it's got to be natural.
Mm-hmm. I've got a couple of questions on that. See, you spoke about Dick Campbell's pre-match conversations. Are you bringing some of them in yourself when you're talking to the 20s? And are you finding, like, see, at half-time, how much do you actually pay attention to what you're getting told? Or is it a bit of like just get your own headspace and do you try and take that into what you're doing with the 20s boys as well?
It is tough because I remember when I was younger, 20, 21, in that team talks, if I'm being honest, I was just thinking about the game. Whereas now it's important you take on because football has went a wee bit more information-based about really tactical. So you have to take the sort of information in. But for my own coaching style, I think you've got to be yourself because you see managers and coaches and they try and be something they're not and that's when it lets them down. Whereas I think if you be yourself and your own personality, that's your sort of positive that you can add to it. But I do try and take like the way Jack Gross conducted his cell and the way he spoke and the way he presented his cell. I try and just take wee bits that I can add into my own personal coaching. And I'd love to be a Dick Campbell, but he's one of a kind. But it did make it show me that it's important that when you turn up on a Friday night for under 20s, it can't just be all pure serious. And you've got to have the laugh, you've got to relax them, you've got to want them to want to play for you. You've got to be likeable. You can't just turn up and be a drill sergeant that's roaring at boys and telling them what to do because they don't respond to that. So I'm quite fortunate the group that we've got, they would run through a brick wall for me. So I'm sort of hoping whatever else I go on to, that can continue. And if you take another group, they can buy into that sort of values.
Are you looking to do your badges and stuff? Have you done them? Or obviously with COVID, it'll be postponed just now. But is that something you're kind of planning over the next couple of years?
I've done all my early ones for the kids and that. But as far as B licence and that goes, I've not went on them yet because over the last sort of few years, I've been focusing more on my work. So as I said before, I went self-employed in that and that. And with the stuff I do now, I don't really have free time. Like, I'm never free. So it's all just football, football, football. So down the line, I'll definitely get on the courses needed to advance. But that's the thing now I'm absolutely missing, coaching, because I love it. I like getting out in the training pitch with them as well and just adding things into a training session that, I take some of my Stenhouse Muir training sessions and give it to them so they're actually getting the same training session that I'm doing. So definitely.
And then just the last question, because like I said, we're conscious of keeping you. Somebody had got in touch, obviously, saying that, and the information's maybe not coming through yet, but Stenny have obviously hired 12 analysts. I don't know if like the players, it's been on Twitter and stuff, which is. We were saying before you came on, it's almost an analyst per player, which you'll not be happy with. Obviously, like you said, football's going that way, almost that information way. So that's how do you view like analysis? Do you think sometimes some clubs can overcomplicate things? And how do you see it? Because it's kind of creeping in now at all levels, isn't it?
Yeah, I think the main thing is how it's presented. I've been full-time with clubs and you do video analysis on a Friday before a game, but the way it's presented, you're falling asleep sitting looking at it and it's nobody's interested and whatever. Whereas, again, going back to Jack Ross, even though we're part-time, he'd spend 5-10 minutes on it instead of half an hour on it, and it was just short, sharp, to the point, exactly what he wanted, and he engaged you, so you were willing to take it on. And obviously with Stenny getting these boys in, one of the lads got in touch with me that's going to be working with me, and I think if I was younger I probably would have what's this all about and I know better, but I think in this day and age you've got to be open-minded, and if an analyst can come in and pinpoint with all the cameras and the technology now, right, in this game here you've done this 5 times, I think if you do this, this will help you, and you've got to be open to it, you've got to want to get better. Even though I'm 28, like, I still want to be around for the next 7 years, 10 years. So you've got to sort of move with the times and buy into it.
Is that what he was kind of saying to you? Is there any, was he kind of asking if there's anything you want to look at, or was it just introducing himself type thing? Without going into too much detail and stuff for him, obviously.
Yeah, well, he introduced himself with a really nice message, and said he was like, I know, obviously, you've played the game and I've not, and why would you listen to me sort of thing? Whereas I don't see it that way at all. He had the clips from one of our games this season, and I think it was a three-minute clip from my game, and he highlighted a few points, and I looked at him and I was like, to be fair, he's right there. So
that's a good start, eh? When it's important that he sends you something straight away, almost that you think, he's on the ball, he knows what he's talking about.
Absolutely, and I think it's got to work both ways. Like, there'll probably be things he'll say, and I'll be like, well, the reason I do that is this, and he might learn from that and whatnot. But again, I'm playing League Two in Scottish football, I'm nowhere near the finished article, it never will be. So I'm open to anything that can make you improve. And going back to Paul Green, the fitness coach, he's came in and his sort of style is different to what I'm used to. And again, there's bits that I don't like, I think isn't football related, but there's bits that I'm like, that's proper good training there. So it's like anything, it's all relative. There's going to be good in everything, and there is going to be bad with certain stuff.
We had the Still and Albion head analysis on actually a couple of weeks ago, Bill Law, and he was saying one of the only benefits of COVID is obviously with the games getting streamed now, there's a lot more footage for the analysts and stuff to work with, whereas before you may be struggling to get that footage and things. So, Muzz or James, did you have anything else?
Yeah, just to basically thank Greg again for taking the time to come on, and it's a really, really good bit of insight from a player's point of view to life in football, and it's some really refreshing viewpoints and stuff like that. So yeah, just to thank you, Greg.
No, brilliant. It's been really enjoyable coming on. So I said this on our podcast on before. At the end of the day, footballers are human beings as well. Sometimes we get sort of folks see us in a different light, but we're not. We're football guys. We love football. We love talking about it. We love playing it. So that's a privilege to come on.
So thanks very much to Greg for joining us. As always, new content, 12 p.m. every Thursday. You can get us on Spotify by searching Through the Turnstiles and on Apple Podcasts. Any feedback, get us on Twitter at Turnstiles There, as well as any guests that you'd like to see on, suggestions for them. And if you're watching on YouTube, if you could do us a massive favour and like this video and subscribe to the channel, that would help us massively. Cheers.